Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Virginia Escrenier of the Writing Mama Show. And just quickly to kind of go over what's happening here on the World of Ink, since we are approaching the, well, we are actually in the holiday seasons, I should say, we're not really approaching them anymore. We are kind of slowing down until after the first of the year with shows. However, we are this week loaded up with shows, believe it or not. Marcia Casper-Cook will not be having her show, A Good Story is a Good Story, tomorrow on Tuesday. However, the Empowerment Show will air Wednesday, and that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 Mountain, 1 Pacific, for those who want to tune in. We're going to be talking about the 10 Ultimate Truths Girls Should Know on the Empowerment Show. I will be on there joined with Irene Roth and with Tracy McDonald, and we will have our guest on with us, which is a mom blogger, Carrie Camprys. So if you are interested in her blog that she has, that she is called Mommy Blogger, and she tends to talk about dealing with empowering your teenage girls, you'll want to definitely tune in on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And then it looks like Fran Lewis will not be having her show, Book Discussion, on Thursday. But on Friday, we will have a Family Matters show, and on there we'll be talking about the 12 tips of connecting with prickly teens on that show. And we will be joined with Familius author Brad Wilcox, who will be sharing about that. He actually is professor at Brigham Young University here in Utah, and does youth camps as well, so that will be a fun show, and that one will be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday. And then it looks like the next show we'll have will be on Saturday, which has been at Pomerantz's show, Any Which Way But Loose, and that's on Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's always an interesting show if you are into pulp culture and into basically a show kind of like The View or like the Talking Heads and stuff like that, because they just kind of cover all the things that are just happening currently. So anyways, you can tune on to those, and you can always catch us, of course, on Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, and obviously just go to blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network. You can see all the links and all the different ways you can catch our shows and any of our previous shows as well. But today on the Writing Mama Show, I am joined with one of the best-selling Utah young adult authors, J.R. Johansen. She was a speaker out here in October at the St. George Book Festival. So I'm excited to have her on the show because we tried before the festival, but things just kind of happened. So we were able to get you finally on the show. So it's great to have you here. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'm good. And you have quite a few books out. You have Insomnia, Paranoia, and then you also have, I can't remember if it's out yet or not, Cut Me Free.
Yeah, Cut Me Free comes out January 27th, so not quite yet. I have a few more, like, on the horizon that are sold, and I have titles for and release dates for some of them, but they are not out yet. So,
but I knew Cut Me Free wasn't out in October, so I wasn't sure if it was out, not if it was already out, because now we're in December. If it was, it was after the New Year. So, after the New Year. Now, I know, obviously, Insomnia and paranoia, obviously, those fall into the paranormal, you know, kind of that whole darker fantasy, you know, genre type area. Is your Cut Me Free, is that one also within that same kind of grouping?
Cut Me Free, it's different. It's actually not, there's no paranormal aspect to it. It's completely real world contemporary thriller. So it's still thriller. It's still kind of edgy, a little bit intense, but it's not, there's no paranormal aspect to that book.
But you still kept it as a thriller, because, I mean, you are an intense thriller writer. I was actually talking with Tracy McDonald the other day, and her, gosh, I can't remember how old Zachary is. I think Zach, 13, 14, I think somewhere in there. Anyway, uh-huh. But I know he's devoured your first two books, Insomnia and Paranoia, and he was just talking about how intense it is when you read your scenes, and there's just action. He just loves your work, which I'm sure you're going, oh, a young man loves my writing, because, you know, a lot of times, as it seems like anyways in the young adult genre, that you have more, you know, girls who follow and read within that market versus the boys. For whatever reason, they get to that age,
you know,
and they just kind of stop reading.
You know, I think that's I honestly think that's a common misconception. At least I think that's true for a lot of authors. For me, myself, I have not found that to be the case. And I don't know if it's because, you know, in Insomnia and Paranoia, that first series that I have, it's a boy main character, and maybe that draws more young men to read my book, my books, but... I've actually, like, as far as fan base, people that I've heard from, I hear from way more teenage boys than teenage girls. And
wow.
I love that. Like, it makes me so happy to tap into that audience, because I feel like they're drastically underrepresented. I think a lot of people, especially, you know, in publishing, a lot of publishers think that they just stop reading. And I think a lot of guys don't. They want something else to read. They want something new. And I think a lot of them skip to adult because they can't find themselves represented as main characters in YA as much as they want to. And so I think they're kind of forced out of the genre and out of that age range, and I think it's unfortunate. So I definitely hear more from them, and I'm very happy about it.
That's great, and I totally agree with you, because I look at a lot of when, because Marsha and I get a lot of media releases when books are getting released,
mm-hmm.
and new releases are happening from different publishers. And the one thing we see a lot, not so much in middle grade, it seems like middle grade, they're starting to bridge that gap, and I think it's because of what happened with Harry Potter so many years ago, that they realized, oh, boys, you know, aren't as reluctant readers as we thought. But I know
yeah.
It's YA. It seems like a lot of them are focusing still on, you know, more of the romance, coming-of-age girl-type stories versus boys. And if you do find a boy's book in YA, it's usually sports-driven, which, like my son growing up, the only sport he played was fencing. And, you know, how many people write a book about fencing? So, you know, unless it's like a swashbuckler where they're going to be fencing because, you know, they're pirates or something, or, you know, you're in France or something like that. He typically, you know, he could care less about, like, the baseball and the football and the soccer and those kind of books, which is what a lot of YA, I think, young men books tend to. There's, like, this misconception where old boys play sports, or old boys are, you know, or Boy Scouts or whatever, and like to camp and fish. And I'm going, there's a lot of them that don't like those
yeah.
things. So I think,
yeah.
and I think, you know, with you having, you know, that main character who is Mel, and it being a thriller, paranormal type book, you know, boys feel like they can pick that up. Like, you know, that's probably why you have such a great turnout of fans being young men, because they're like, oh, it's a book I can read, and it's not sports driven, it's not, you know, outdoors driven where I'm camping or fishing or whatever.
Yeah, is, absolutely,
know,
it's
nice.
It's true. Even the boys that are athletic and do want to, you know, are focus in the sports arena, that's not all they are. That's not all they do, and that's not all they're going to be interested in either. So it's a, I think putting anyone in a box is a bad idea, and I think that that's happened a lot in YA. I think middle grade is different. I agree on that. I think middle grade, they've really figured out that not only are boys still reading, but they are, but the girls have no problem with reading about boys either, and so they can. There's quite a few middle grade series and very popular stories that are with a male main character. But I actually, when I sold Insomnia in Paranoia, I sold it overseas first, which is pretty, not very common. And
right.
Then when I sold it here, we got a lot of feedback from, huge publishing houses that were like, well, we're not entirely sure about a main character that's a boy, or we're not entirely sure about a, like, they felt like thriller wasn't a genre that had really picked up in YA yet. At that point, it has done a lot of growth since then, but thriller hadn't really picked up, and then the fact that it was a boy main character, they were like, this just is too risky for us to invest in for a few of the houses. So, I mean, it's definitely a problem that I think that's part of the reason why there's not as many books out there for YA readers that are guys and want somebody they can relate to.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Now, what made you decide to write in the young adult versus middle grade? Or, I mean, most people, especially when they're breaking into more of the adolescent genres of writing, most new authors, the first thing I usually hear out of new authors, I'm going to write picture books. Is always the first. Everybody thinks like picture books is like the first thing that we see when they think of like the children's and adolescent market. But what made you gravitate to the young adult market? Because I know it's a very popular market right now. I know a lot of books have become crossover books within that market, which has launched a whole new one, a whole new area, which is the new adult, which is the bridge between obviously high school to the 30-year-olds. So you're capturing basically college age kids in that group. But to me, because so many people now are switching from the mentality of I want to write picture books to I want to write young adult. I'm just kind of curious, what made you, did you do it because that was just the market that tends to be very hot, or you just find that's where your voice is as an author?
I don't know that I ever actually made a decision to write young adult. I think I started reading a little bit of it and just kind of felt like that's the story I wanted to tell. I feel like there's a lot of things that happen in that age group that are repeated again and again as you get older. I think it's the first time that people are actively trying to identify themselves. I think everybody goes through, process when you're younger of trying to figure out who you are and what you like and, what you're favorite color is and things like that. But then when you get to be a teenager, you're trying to figure out like who you are as a person and what makes you different from everyone around you, and trying to figure out how to describe that and kind of a self-discovery. That's the first time you're actively doing it. Whereas, but I think everyone changes as they get older. And I think we embark on that journey again and again as we age. So it's like even as an adult, you're kind of constantly, changing a little bit and growing a little bit and re-identifying who you are. And I think the first time that you do that that's why YA appeals to so many adults, because it's something everyone can relate to. Either it's something you're doing right now or something you have done in the past. In that way of figuring out, what you stand for, what means something to you. And I think that's it's a strong, powerful thing that drew me to that genre.
No, I think, that's, really, really good points of why you write in the genre, too, because, the fact that you've, been reading it and exploring it and all that as well and understanding that makes you, I think, where you can relate more to the readership, because that's the one thing I've seen is like when writers tend to And I'm not saying writers shouldn't try and stretch themselves and you know, try and write in other genres, because I, obviously it's always good as a creative, you know, to stretch your artistic ability. But, you know, if you're doing something because it's the trend, sometimes I think, you know, it feels more formulated, which I think your books don't, because that passion's there, because you understand. I'm sure it helps too, you know, having kids at home, because I know we were talking right before the show that you have two boys, and, you know, they're going through that, you know, stage of life where they're entering, you know, exiting childhood and entering young manhood. So, you know, having that close to home, I'm sure it helps as well, because, you know, it helps you remember when you were that age, and watching your own kids go through it as well is always helpful. But no, I think that's great. I'd love to kind of talk a little about the book, the two books you already have, and then of course the one you have coming out in at the beginning of 2015. So let's talk with Insomnia, because I know that was the first. Did you sell Insomnia and Paranoia at the same time, or was there a few years or a few months between?
I sold them in most of the countries. So it's coming out in 8 languages. And in most of the countries, it sold with both books. Interestingly, I planned originally on my being a duology, you know, two books. And then when I finished the second book, I realized that I hadn't really finished that world. And so I actually wrote a third book. There's a book, it's called Mania. It's the last one in the series, and it's a dual point of view book, which I've never done before now, so that was a really, really fun experience. That one will be coming out in July of 2015. So that whole experience was just really interesting, because I thought from the beginning, okay, well, you know, I think this is kind of where I want to go with the series. I want there to be two books. I want this to happen and this to happen. And then when I finished the second book, I was like, you know, there's so much to this world that I didn't get to really touch on. And then there's a character that's in book one, but is a much bigger part of book two that we really just have just discovered more about him in book two. And he's a big character, so he becomes kind of the main character in book three. And Parker, who's been the central figure from book one and book two, it's more like 60-40, I would say, between the two points of view. It's more this other character named Jack's book, but then it goes back and forth between the two. And that was a really fun experience. And I had not sold that book, so I went, you know, back to my publisher, and I kind of proposed it to them, and they bought that one on proposal. And I just turned that one in so that it will be printing into ARCs soon. So we still have, like, copy edits and line edits on it and stuff, but it's fairly well wrapped up, and I'm really excited about how it turned out. I love that book, so.
That's exciting. Now, what made you decide to write this series? I mean, what was probably the thing that, when you sat down, that really sparked you and got you going for it?
Well, my first book was not a thriller. It was kind of a sci-fi fantasy weird mixture, and it was you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I just had this idea in my head, and I had to write it down. I never wanted to write books. I didn't know what I was I don't know how I actually ended up writing that first book, to be honest with you. It just kind of happened, and then I kind of was sat down and was like, you know, that was kind of fun. I kind of liked that. But obviously, you know, as with most first books, it sucked. It was not good. And I rewrote it several times, just trying to learn, and I was growing in my craft and all of that. And then one of the feedbacks I kept getting from people was, you know, your strongest scenes are the ones that are like action, high intensity scenes. And I was like, interesting, like that's not something I expected. So when I decided finally, I was like, okay, this book, you know, there are some fundamental flaws in it. You know, one of the main ones was that it just wasn't unique enough. It didn't stand out, and it didn't have enough of a compelling like reason to read this book over another book to grab anyone's attention. So I decided to set it aside and move on to the next story. And when I did that, I was like, you know, maybe I should take what I've learned here about my own strengths in writing and try something a little different. And so I stayed in the YA genre, but I decided to write like a thriller because that obviously has the most high-intensity, you know, action-packed kind of scenes and sequences in that type of a book. Then when I, you know, was tossing around different ideas for what to work on next, I woke up one morning after a particularly weird dream, and I just thought, you know, I wonder if everybody else's dreams are like this. Are they this strange? And, you know, what would my husband think if he was in that dream I just had? Would he think I was crazy? Like, what would he think? And what are his dreams like? What would I think if I was in his dreams? And then it just kind of went off from there. And it took, you know, for you know, listeners that aren't familiar with the story, it's about a teenage boy who, when he goes to sleep at night, he sees the dreams of the last person he made eye contact with, and it's killing him. He's dying of sleep deprivation. He's kind of slowly going crazy, starting to hallucinate. He's not entirely sure what's real and what's not real. And then he meets a girl, and in her dreams, he can actually get real sleep for the first time in years. And, you know, then he basically becomes addicted to actual sleep and has to make eye contact with her at the end of every day, and she thinks he's stalking her, and it's super creepy in a lot of ways for her. So it's, you know, it's like I kind of took that initial idea, and then I was like, okay, now how do I, you know, what else can I do to this idea to turn it into a thriller? And that's where I kind of, you know, it's killing him. His brain isn't sleeping. It's causing sleep deprivation. I did all this research on sleep deprivation, which is terrifying. That's a real terrifying thing. So it was. I mean, I think that's kind of just where it spun off. My favorite part about writing Insomnia, though, was the unreliable main character is so fascinating to me because he's like the ultimate unreliable main character. He has no idea what's real and what's not real for, you know, a big portion of the book, and thus the reader has no idea what's real and what's not real because we're in that first person point of view. And so it's tricky to write that, but it's so fun. It gives you so much you know, cool freedom and different ways to amp up the tension because you're just constantly questioning everything on the page. It's a really fun way to write.
I loved it because my husband and I are big fans of the movie Inception, and we felt it had that same kind of feeling when I was done and when I finished the book Insomnia, because I haven't read Paranoia yet, but I've read Insomnia, and I just remember thinking the whole time was the same thing that I was doing when I watched the movie Inception. Was just like, okay. Has this whole thing just been this person's head or not? You know, because the lines get blurred and it's easy to do. It's very. I mean, I'm sure we all do it in our sleep. Where actually, I just did the other night. It was just so funny because I felt somebody touched my shoulder in the middle of the night when I was sleeping, which of course had been my husband. But anyways, you know, because I was like in my dream, I was like in this dark alley walking down the alley, and all of a sudden I felt like someone touching my shoulder. And in my dream, I like, you know, physically wanted to lash out and like fight whoever the crazy person was stalking me. And the next morning I woke up, I was in my head, I'm like, did you touch my shoulder to try and wake me up? And he's like, yeah, you were like tossing and turning. But it transferred into, like, you know, which is what happens a lot of time, you know, it transfers into, which I'm sure you saw when you were doing your research, that reality can transfer into your dream state, and you blur them sometimes. So, and that's how I felt when I was doing stuff. I'm like, wow, I could be daydreaming, like daywalking with, you know. So, and you are an intense writer. So, if people like intense books, you're definitely an author for people to follow because you do. That's one reason why we had you come out during the festival to talk about that, because a lot of writers have a hard time writing intent, to really let that intensity, either they don't know how to, or they are afraid it's too much, I think, you know, so you can tell they hold back, and you don't, you do not hold back, and I love that.
Thank you. I actually love Inception too. I had sold Insomnia already when Inception came out, and I was just like, I was watching it in the theater. I was like, this is awesome. This is like it came right out of my head.
So,
I totally see what you're saying there. I think intensity is like, it's a big thing. I get so many like emails, fan emails from people that are like, I sat down to read your book, and then, you know, 4 hours later, I was done, and I couldn't I couldn't stop. Like, I started it too late, and I didn't finish until 3 a.m., and I blame you for my lack of sleep. And, you know, it's funny. I get some really funny emails like that, and, you know, so many people have said to me, like, I guess it's an easy joke, but so many people have said, you know, insomnia caused me to have insomnia and not sleep, you know, because I was reading it. So it's been a lot of fun. I think it's a great tool to have in your arsenal as a writer to be able to really bring that intense, like, emotion out of the page. Like, that's something that can really grip your readers. It'll make them remember your story. It's a really important tool to have in any book. You know, you have intensity in varying levels in every kind of novel. So it's something that I really enjoy working with. So,
now, how long does it take you to really outline your book? Like, do you do detailed outlines? Are they more loose outlines, and you just do more revision and draft work? How long does it take you to work on these books? Because, you know, with the way the scenes are, I mean, I know you have to really make sure that they're hitting the right way and coming across emotionally the right way, because, you know, when there is that much intensity, you don't want something to pull away from that. So what is that process like for you?
So I think it's kind of varied from book to book, depending on where I am and what's happening, both in my career and in real life. So, for example, with Cut Me Free, I was writing that while I was on submission with Insomnia, and it was both a thrilling and terrifying time because it was such a strange. Honestly, I know so many authors now who've been on submission, and I have never heard a story of, like, a submission story like my submission story. Like, it was just so weird. Like, the way things went down, it was really bizarre. And so it was really exciting because I had things happen. Like, I sold in Germany first and then in Italy. And in Germany, like, we sold at auction. There were 5 different houses bidding on it. I didn't even understand what was happening, honestly, until we were a week into the auction. I misunderstood what my agent was telling me. I thought they were saying that, like, there were 5 houses that were interested, and they were actually telling me that 5 houses were actively bidding on it. And I had no idea that I was actually at auction. I was like, oh, well, let me know if somebody, you know, ends up getting it or whatever.
Yeah.
I was clueless. So it was really exciting. I had moments like that were really exciting. I also had really frustrating moments where I, you know, did revisions on it with houses in the U.S., like big houses, and then, you know, after my revision, they're like, we love it. We're just not going to buy it because it's got a boy main character or whatever. And that was, it's like, yeah, it had a boy main character before you had me do that revision, so that was a little frustrating to spend all that time and then have you turn it down for some reason that had nothing to do with what we worked on, you know.
Right.
So there were, you know, some real ups and downs during that, and so that emotion, I think, got poured into that book. Cut Me Free is a vastly different book in a lot of ways than Insomnia and Paranoia. I think Insomnia and Paranoia are fun reads, like they're exciting and they're you know, dark and, you know, thrilling and stuff, but they're, like, Cut Me Free has some real, like, real-world emotional intensity. It deals with issues that are a lot darker, like, you know, it deals with abuse, and it deals with recovery and being a survivor of abuse and how to, like, heal from that kind of thing. While it still has all of the intensity of the thriller aspects, it's got a whole lot more emotional depth to it that I would say than Insomnia and Paranoia do. So it's a different kind of book. But so that one I worked on in a different way than I usually do. With Insomnia and Paranoia, I write like super loose outlines, like 7 points, like plot structure kind of outlines. And then I'm very, very free to change it as I go along. With Cut Me Free, it was much more detailed, and I did a lot more revisions on it. I ended up cutting one of the main characters. That one was different.
Did you feel like that was a huge risk, cutting out a main character? Because, I mean, usually people are like, oh, a sub-character or, you know, a walk-it or something like that, no big deal. But if it's somebody who's part of your main cast of characters, was that a hard, you know, to take the red tape to them and to say, you're out of here?
It wasn't as hard as I would have thought it would be, mostly because I kept a lot of him alive. There were two kind of guys in her life that, you know, had different roles basically, but they were there. They were both there kind of consistently throughout, and I loved them both. And I ended up deciding to cut one of them. And so I kept a lot of the things that I loved about him alive and just made the other character actually a much more well-rounded and fuller character by adding in some of that and combining the two characters into one. And I'm so happy with how he turned out. I love him. So it worked out okay. It wasn't as hard as it would have been in another circumstance where I just had to take him out completely and lose him.
Right.
So I was okay with it.
Now, is Cut Me Free with the same publisher that you have Insomnia and Paranoia with? Or are you with a totally different publisher?
It's a completely different publisher. Insomnia and Paranoia are with Flux Books, and so they're the YA imprint of Llewellyn, which is one of the biggest nonfiction, like spiritual book publishers in the U.S., and then Flux is their YA imprint. So that one's, it's like a mid-sized house and like a fairly small imprint. But it's good nationwide distribution. And then the Cut Me Free, and then there's another book that's going to be with them. It's called The Row, which should be, I think, fall of 2016. That one's also a standalone real-world contemporary thriller, and they're both with Macmillan, the Farrar Straus Giroux imprint. So,
mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, obviously Macmillan, they're huge and completely different in every way from my first publisher.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, it used to be a long time ago that, you know, when you got published with a publishing house, typically, you know, they're usually your main publisher and who most of your books are with. I mean, but it seems like that's pretty much gone away now that more authors are being published through multiple publishers versus, you know, one all the time. Like, you know, I know there's still some authors, I guess, who have, like, their one publisher that always publishes them, but seems like that's changing now. Did you find it?
Yeah, I mean,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say. So, did you find it a huge learning curve working with like two totally different, you know, houses and how they do things? Because I'm sure you learned even more because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think when it comes to the, you know, staying with the same house, I think that used to be the case. I can't speak for like adult publishing, but I think in children's publishing, more and more, especially YA, there's just not, with a lot of publishers, there's just not the feeling of trying to build the career or the author. It's like building the book. And so it's like more of a short-term commitment than a long-term commitment. And I think with that kind of atmosphere authors are adapting, and they are, you know, much more willing to move to a new publisher if that's the way that it's going to work out best. And I think publishers are growing into the idea that that's not some kind of a betrayal in any way. It's just kind of a matter of finding the right fit for a certain book. So I think that is more and more common. I did learn a ton, especially because my two publishing houses are so drastically different in size. It's not like going from Penguin to Macmillan or something, although I think that's also a learning experience. I think houses all kind of operate very differently, but yeah, it's very, very different every step of the way, really. With Macmillan, it's been very different than with Flux. And they both have you know, definitely, they all have assets, they all have things they bring to the table, but yeah, it's just I think everybody has to find their own niche for what works best for them. What was really difficult about it, though, was Flux operates, Flux Books operates about 6 months off from the schedule that Macmillan does, and so all of my deadlines were like lining up because my books are 6 months apart about between the two houses. And wow. So all of my deadlines were like at the same time. And I was just like, this is not fun right here, this whole situation. I don't enjoy that. So yeah. I would probably, like, going forward, try and, if I was going to do this again with two different houses, I would probably try and set some kind of a schedule in advance to kind of lock down a little bit more happiness and less stress in my life. It worked out all right.
And I can understand that, and I don't know if you experienced this or not, but I know typically, I mean, for anybody, it doesn't even have to be an author, anybody who tends to have a job where it's homebound, there's this misconception among family and friends that, well, you can just adapt your work schedule so you can go do this with me or take care of this. And it's like, no, because if that takes too much of my time up, you know, I can't regain back the time I need to work. Because I see that a lot in my own life. And Marcia and I joke about that all the time when we're trying to work on stuff for World of Ink, that our husbands sometimes, you know, like, we're working at like 1 o'clock, one or 2 a.m. in the morning trying to get stuff done because, you know, somebody decides just to pop over because, oh, well, they'll be home. It's like, Marcia's got more dedicated than me. She actually has an office space where she actually gets out of her house, where I moved my office back into my house, and sometimes I think I regretted that choice.
Definitely. it's that's a struggle trying to maintain that.
Yeah, do you do most of your writing at home, or do you try and get out of the house, like go to a library or a coffee shop or like, you know, like Barnes & Noble, how they have like the little coffee shop, but they also have those areas where you can sit and read or work. Do you try and get away to places like that so there's less interruption when you're writing?
I try to sometimes, but more often than not, I just write from home. I am lucky enough that both of my kids are in school, so I have, you know, several hours during the day every day to just work on that. But you know, the more books that I have out, the more books that I have under contract, I am amazed at how much additional work is added on in the area of like marketing and like emails and all of that side stuff that doesn't even play into the whole writing aspect. With every book that comes out, it's like that multiplies, and it's kind of stunning how much time that alone takes up. And that's not even talking about the writing and editing and revising time. That's just side work. And my background is in marketing. My degree is in marketing, and so I, you know, I feel comfortable in that area, but it's still, I think in some ways, like, that's, it's a blessing because I know what I'm doing in that area. I know what things will be more helpful to me, and I'm decently good at marketing for my books. But on the other hand, like I think I spend a lot more time on marketing than your typical author who doesn't have that educational background in that area would. And so it's kind of sometimes I'm happy about it and sometimes I'm less happy about it.
And I understand that double-edged sword because my background is also in marketing, and that's one thing that I find, you know, with the World of Ink. I mean, I love doing shows, but I probably spend 60% of my time on the backside doing the marketing stuff for World of Ink, you know, and Marcia does too, than we do with we talked about this many times that we'd love doing more shows than we do. And we have other hosts, so they bridge that gap for us so we can focus on the marketing. But, yeah, it does. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, I know I need to do this, but like, this isn't the stuff I want to be working on, and that's so hard because there's, like, stuff you want to do. Like, I'd rather be, you know, writing on the blogs and putting out some great content versus doing this other stuff.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I think that at some point I've kind of lived in the idea of you have to enjoy. I mean, not everybody gets to write books for a living. There's a lot of people who would love to do that and don't get to. And I love that I'm able to do that. It makes me really happy, and I need to be able to enjoy the perks of that. And so, you know, like, for example, in April, I was invited to go on a writing retreat to Paris, of all places, where there's like 40 YA authors. They're renting rooms in used to be a convent, they say it's haunted, that is now like an artist's commune. And like, we're spending 5 days out in the middle of France countryside outside of Paris, and, you know, writing in this artist's commune for 5 days, and then we're going into Paris for a couple of days, and we're doing a big signing at the like New American Library, which is like a block from the Eiffel Tower. And it's like, okay, I know that this is going to take up time and effort to get this all ready and to be able to go and do this, but how do you not do that? You know what I mean? When you get that kind of an opportunity. And so it's a delicate balance because you have to also learn to say no to things because you don't have time to do everything that you want to do. But you know, still like enjoying your life as much as you can. it's a lot of tightrope walking, I think, in this industry, but a lot more than people on the outside who don't, you know, live it every day would expect.
Oh, yeah. And trust me, I know, because when I was working with everything in October with you and the speakers we had, and not even including the other authors who wanted to be a part of the book festival as just being there to sign books or sell books or whatever, I mean, by the time I was in, I think I had like 60 authors that I was juggling in October for that week.
Oh, yeah.
And my husband, he actually took the week off, and, you know, he's seen me do the festival before, and, you know, last year I was made director, so I was the main person through the whole thing. But he took the week off to be basically, he says, my grunt worker, so he was my slave for the week, as he likes to call it. And he just looked at me because I'd get home like, well, he was with me, so we'd get home like at 1 a.m. in the morning, and I'd turn around and be back up by 5 so I could, you know, be out the door by 6:30 to be wherever I needed to be. And he's like, I knew you worked hard. He goes, but I had no idea that, you know, he's like, I knew it took over your life. He's just like, I didn't realize it became your life. Like that was your lifeblood. And I'm like, yeah. And I looked at it, and this is how it is for most, you know, successful authors. I mean, everything you do, you have, you, like you said, it's that difficult, it's that balance of family and time for yourself and writing and the marketing and the, you know,
yep.
It is, you're constantly juggling it, and you're constantly having to be aware of opportunity because you never know where it's at, you know, and when you're out.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, you can't just like throw on sweats and head to the grocery store and think it's not a big deal. I mean, what happens if you run into a fan? I mean, you have to kind of start thinking of those kind of things as you, you know, gain, you know, and status and popularity, you know. I remember Stephen King talking about in a thing where he was at a supermarket and somebody came up to him and says, "You're that awesome," you know, that writes those books. And he's at a grocery store of all places. You know, so you never know. You just never know what's going to come your way. So I get it. I only have a month where I have to go through that, but I get it. It's crazy. So
yeah,
I'm curious. What I know you have quite a few books, you know, coming up. So I mean, we have, you know, Cut Me Free that we're looking forward to coming out right in January, and then you have which book right after that?
So Mania will be after that. That comes out in July of next year.
Okay.
And then that's going to finish off the Nightwalker series with Insomnia and Paranoia. And then after that, I have The Row, which is actually, that's kind of a fun, here I'll tell you about the premise because I don't think I've posted it in many places anywhere online, but it is about a girl whose dad is on death row in Texas. I write super happy books. Did I mention that? and so she's, and he's been on death row since she was five, and it's been almost 12 years and since he was convicted, and they've been going through appeal after appeal. He has always claimed his innocence and maintained his innocence, and she and she and her mom have been, you know, just kind of through the ringer trying to, you know, help and support him and you know, believing he's innocent. And then he loses his final appeal and he's scheduled to be executed within 30 days. And and then he tells her that he did it and that she needs to decide, you know, whether and when her mom is ready to find that out and that he wants them to be able to move on, and that's why he's telling them. And then, like, the next morning, she wakes up and finds out that someone has been killed in Texas using the same method that he was, you know, accused of killing people. So he's like, "Oh, well, I just told you that to move on, so you would be able to move on." And no, I didn't do it. And she doesn't know what to believe anymore. And so it's kind of a big psychological mess.
Well, I like your books. So even though you don't write, like, the happy ever after ending books, that's what cares me. I don't like those books. I like reading those books with my younger kids, but other than that, I know, because everybody's like, "Why don't you read romance?" I'm like, because in every romance novel, when they end, they always ride off into the sunset, happy in each other's arms. And that's why I don't read romance.
Yeah.
No, this
it's
is not
a,
my
it's
thing.
A little. Yeah, there's
I'm
a
like,
formula.
If you have a romance book where it ends like Romeo and Juliet, I'm there. You have a tragedy. I will read the romantic tragedy. But yeah, I'm not, because like I'm doing the Outlander series right now, and it's like, it's like, what do you think I'm going? I feel like it's Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and Quantum Leap got married and had a child. Which is really terrible to say. It's not bad writing by any means. I'm not bagging on the author. I think it's great writing. It's just that's what goes through my head every time I'm reading it. I'm like, okay, here we go again. It's Dr. Quinn and Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
It's great writing.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an audience for that. But yeah, no, I like those books, like, occasionally. It's something that I also, I really enjoy, like, not knowing what's going to happen next. So that's definitely kind of where I write in that area. I also,
I said, well, yours get people thinking. I mean, you know, it really gets you, and it's probably why I'm such a huge Stephen King fan, you know, and I tend to lean toward authors who tend to write in the darker fantasy, paranormal-type genres, because they are psychological thrillers in many ways, and it really makes you think about human nature and the way we are as people, you know, and I love that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my minor was in psychology, and I love that too. I love just, you know, researching, you know, the brain is such a, you know, just like every other part of the body, stuff can go wrong there. And there can be, you know, and everybody is a little different, but there's a lot more questions about, you know, morality and stuff when you're talking about stuff going on in your head and you know, your own personal decision-making processes in the, you know, in conjunction with the world around you. So it's a whole different kind of playground, I think, and I love that. And you know, the Macmillan books, Cut Me Free and The Row, they are kind of more crossover books, so they're kind of upper YA into adult. So they're slightly different audience, maybe a little older. I think they're probably still okay for a lot of the same readers of the first books, but they're, you know, slightly older and I think a little more advanced.
I'd say more in that new adult kind of market that's emerging. Like
I mean, it's not quite new adult, but yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you know, kind of in between. It's a crossover. That's what my publisher tells me anyway.
But that's good because you get, you know, wider readership, especially for that market. I mean, that market is really, you know, growing, which is, you know, nice, because I really thought dystopia was going to kind of swamp everybody that was writing within all those subgenres, you know, and I was glad to see that hasn't happened. Not that I'm against dystopia writers either, because I'm not. I liked The Postman. I liked, you know, I enjoyed the Hunger Games series, you know, I don't mind those, but I'm definitely more of the dark fantasy paranormal type reader. I like that stuff. Well, it's been good having you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I think like every other genre, I think dystopian kind of got a little over flooded in that area, but I think in a couple years it'll probably, I think for a while it's going to be slow. You're not going to see a lot of dystopians, but then it'll probably kind of level off to a trickle like all the other genres.
Yeah. Well, I would love for you to share where our listeners can learn more about you. I mean, we do have it up on the show's site, so anybody who wants to go to Blog Talk Radio, World of Ink Network, can find your links there. But for those who are listening, like, through podcasts, like iTunes or whatever, I'd love for you to share any links so they can learn more about you, your books, hopefully purchase, you know, at least purchase Insomnia, guys, I'm telling you. If you want a really just kind of intense, fun read that definitely will keep you up. my husband came out one time and it was like 4 a.m. in the morning. He's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm still reading." I'm like, "Go away." So yes, I think those fan mails that you've gotten about how your book's keeping people up and causing their insomnia, yes, that would be pretty accurate. But so where can listeners find out more about you and your books?
Yeah, thanks. My site is just www.jrjohansson.com, and Johansson is the Finnish spelling, so it's Johansson. I'm kind of everywhere. I'm on Goodreads, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I have a Facebook page, I'm on Tumblr, I'm everywhere, but all of those links to all of those various sites can be found on my website, so that's probably the best, most central location to find information about me.
And are you going to be, I mean, obviously Christmas is a week away, so I highly doubt you're going to be out and about doing author appearances, but you never know. So are there any plans for you to be anywhere as an author, either locally in the state of Utah or outside of the state?
Yeah, we're working on some things for the launch of Cut Me Free, so that's the end of January. I don't really have anything going on before that, but actually for anyone who is planning to attend Comic-Con Salt Lake City Fan Experience, that's January 29th through the 31st. We're working with them and Macmillan, the organizers of that and Macmillan, and we're going to be doing probably a huge like launch party at FanX, so that should be a lot of fun. I'll also be doing like a Fright Night with some other local thriller authors in Salt Lake. I'm kind of everywhere. I'll be at RT in May in, I think, Dallas. I'll be in the Worldcon in August in Spokane, Washington. So I'm kind of all over the place. But I keep that all updated on my site and on my blogs and stuff. So.
Yeah. You are going to be a busy lady when the new year rings in. Oh my goodness! Well,
yes.
Have fun at Comic Con.
Yes, I have not
been there, and I was told by many of you guys in October that I am missing out not going. And I would love to go the first year, but unfortunately, I won't be able to. But I can't believe how much the Salt Lake one has grown. I want to say is it the second biggest now? I mean, I know San Diego is the biggest because that's the original, and I was in college. And used to go down there, so I used to go to that one. But I know the Salt Lake one at the Salt Palace has gotten, I think, I know it's one of the bigger ones now here for Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's been crazy. Yeah, it's grown. Like the very first year, it was the biggest first-year Comic-Con ever. And then since then, it's grown by like roughly, I think, 15,000 to 20,000 people every time that they hold it, and both Comic-Con and Fan Experience. So it goes back and forth.
Yeah.
They're actually doing one every 6 months because it's so popular. So the last one I think Comic-Con in the fall was like 114,000 people. If I could be wrong on that, but it was somewhere around there, 114, 120, which is just massive. It was crazy. It was so awesome. But I think it's the third biggest, if what I heard was correct. It's San Diego and then New York and then Salt Lake City.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was up there. I knew it was definitely in the top five. And definitely, if anybody's never been, and not that I'm trying to boost Salt Lake by any means, but the Salt Palace is an amazing building. So it's an amazing place to go to anyways to go see that building.
Yeah, they have great guests and it's amazing.
Yeah,
I think that's probably the only thing. If there's anything that's going to limit the size of the growth for this thing, it might be the Salt Palace because it's the biggest place there is and it's fantastic and it's great to have it there. But I think they're going to possibly outgrow that building and I don't think there's really somewhere else to go.
Yeah,
so I'll be interested to see how that works out because it's packed as it is already. So it'll be interesting to watch that as it kind of develops. But yeah, it's exciting.
Oh.
Everybody should go check it out.
Well, I'm excited for you and how well you've been doing because, I mean, and I've been very, very pleased to see what's been happening. And obviously it's because I'm in Utah, so I'm always a big supporter of Utah authors. But just the success that I've been seeing from so many of you guys as you've debuted your books and, you know, and watching the careers grow of a lot of the Utah authors. So kudos to you to being part of that group because I know we have a lot of people who write in the state, but there's only been a handful that have, you know, like yourself and, you know, Brandon Mall and James Dashner, who write in the young adult and middle grade genres that are, you know, seeing a lot of success, Stephanie Meyer being one of them as well. So kudos for you for, you know, starting to join those ranks with those guys. Hopefully we'll see you on the New York bestsellers list soon.
That would be great. Thank you. The writing community out here is fantastic. So it's a great place to be right now, I think.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. And I wish you much success. And I'll definitely be keeping in tabs on your career and tabs with you. And hopefully we'll cross paths again as these different events start to emerge. Because I know I'll be heading up north more from what it sounds like when I've talked to my superiors up in Salt Lake about what I do. So I'm like, great.
I want
to travel. Yeah. I've had a couple of people in Salt Lake who put on different literary type, you know, not, I'd love to be invited to help with Comic-Con, but some of the other different types of things that they do, festivals and stuff, and they've asked after this recent book festival here in St. George if I'd be willing to help sit on some of those boards. So you may see me at some things come 2015, get up there more.
Yay, well,
it's been great.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, I wish you much success, and thank you so much for finding time to come on the show. And I, like I said, you know, I wanted you back in October and it just didn't work out. So I'm glad we were able to, right before Christmas, get you on. And hopefully some of our listeners will consider going out and picking up your books for some great stocking stuffer ideas.
There you go.
All right, well, you take care.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Thanks so much. I'll talk to you later. You're welcome. Bye.
Okay, thank you.
And then just really quickly for our listeners one more time, I will go over our lineup that we have for shows up to Christmas. So there will not be tomorrow on Tuesday A Good Story is a Good Story with Marcia Casper Cook. However, she will be returning in January in 2015. So you'll just have to wait till after the holiday seasons. But we do have Wednesday the Empowerment Show with myself, Virginia S. Grenier, Tracy McDonald, and Irene Roth. And we will be talking about the 10 Ultimate Truths Girls Should Know. And we'll be joined by Carrie, who's a mommy blogger, and she will be sharing some of her tips and some of the things that she shares on her mommy blogger blog on Wednesday, and that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday, 2 Mountain, 1 Pacific. And then Fran Lewis will not have her show book discussion on Thursday, but she will return after New Year's as well. So in January 2015, Fran will be back with her show. But we do on Friday have a Family Matters show, which we'll be talking about the 12 tips for connecting with prickly teens. And we have Familius author Brad Wilcox, who is a professor at Brigham Young University, joining us for that show. He also does youth camps and workshops and so forth with parents and teens. So that will be a fun show. That will be at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, 2 Mountain and 1 Pacific. And then on Saturday, Bennett Pomerantz has his show, Any Which Way But Loose. That will be on at 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific. And he will be joined with a group of authors to kind of just chit-chat about pulp culture and just current events, their books, and just different things. So if you want to tune into that show on Saturday, Bennett will have that show. And then I will be back on Monday next week to share my article that I wrote about Virginia O'Hanlon and her story, Yes, Virginia, There's a Santa Claus. So you can always tune into that show with me, and that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern time next Monday. And that is what we have lined up so far here at the World of Ink. You can always follow what we have going on at worldofinknetwork.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Twitter, Facebook, anywhere podcasts can be downloaded. Of course, blogtalkradio.com/worldofinknetwork. And we thank all of you for listening. Wishing you all a safe, happy holiday season. Take care. Bye-bye.
Me to the World of Ink.